Thank you, Ms. Alexander. All right, Mr. Hastings, may I proceed?
May it please the court, good afternoon. Your Honors, this case involves a dispute between the parties over their respective rights and obligations under a commercial lease that provided for the construction of a medical facility by the Appalachian Medical Center in a building owned by the appellant Center Place. As a former member of this court, I appreciate perhaps more than many do the heavy burden that an appellant carries in a case like this to demonstrate that the evidence is legally and factually insufficient to support the judgment. That challenge is even more daunting in this case, given the fact that the judgment is supported by 120 findings of fact and conclusions of law that were entered by a very capable trial judge who's now a member of this court and whose fact findings are rightly entitled to great deference under the applicable standards of review. But good judges do occasionally make mistakes, and we believe that we've identified several findings and conclusions relevant to the medical center's counterclaims and defenses that we believe are erroneous, either because the trial court misapplied the law to the facts or because it misconstrued the terms of the lease that governs the rights and obligations of the parties in this case. Of the eight issues that Center Place has raised challenging those findings, two we believe could potentially result in a change or significant change to the law in Texas governing landlord-tenant rights if the court adopts the appellee's argument. So it's those two arguments that I will spend most of my time, if not all of my time, addressing this afternoon. And those issues are whether Section 93002 of the Texas Property Code requires proof that the landlord actually physically exclude the tenant from the premises to establish a violation of the statute. And second, whether to prevail on an action for constructive eviction or breach of a warranty of quiet enjoyment, a tenant in possession must prove that the act occurred on the property and that that act interfered with the tenant's use of the property. If time permits, I'll attempt to address one or more of the other issues, but otherwise I'll stand on my brief and answer any questions the court might have. Before I do go to these two issues, I did want to point out, correct one minor mistake in our briefing. On pages 40 through 41 of the brief, the Appalachian Medical Center contends that in addition to the breaches that the trial court found, the prior breaches that the trial court found that Center Place committed, there are seven independent prior breaches on which the trial court judgment could be affirmed. Now, in response, we have pointed out, and accurately so, that for among other reasons, the judgment cannot be affirmed on the basis of those seven alleged prior breaches because they were not pleaded, and the trial court made no findings on any of the elements of these seven alleged breaches. We also stated that this argument was framed for the first time on appeal, and that is not correct. After our briefing, we discovered that Medical Center, at least as far as we can tell, asserted that the seven acts supporting both the constructive eviction claim and independent breaches which they allege existed appears in footnote 26 of its written closing, which is on page 671 of the clerk's record. We made a mistake. It doesn't change the substance of our argument as to why these seven alleged breaches cannot support the judgment, but we should have done a better job, obviously, of reading the fine print in the record. Turning now to the property code issue, Section 9302 provides in pertinent part that a landlord, quote, may not intentionally prevent a tenant from entering the lease premises except by judicial process, end of quote, unless specifically enumerated circumstances exist that don't apply here. A landlord who violates this statute can be held liable for damages in the amount of 1 month's rent plus attorney's fees, may terminate the lease or may recover possession of the property. We've cited a number of cases in our briefing indicating that this statute was intended by the legislature to prohibit landlords from taking the law into their own hands by physically evicting tenants from their property without due process. Texas courts have consistently held that the statute is not violated by non-physical acts such as posting a notice to vacate on a tenant's door. It's undisputed, and we believe the evidence in this in the record of this case conclusively shows that CenterPlace did nothing physically to prevent Medical Center from accessing the premises, at least in the literal sense of that word. During opening argument, for example, Appley's counsel admitted that every time, and I quote, every time the Medical Center wanted access to the premises, CenterPlace gave it to them. Medical Center, however, argues that it was physically prevented from entering the property in what I would say a theoretical sense, because it believed or felt that it could not enter the premises after receiving a written letter from CenterPlace's attorney, I believe it was dated June 21, 2007, in which, among other things, CenterPlace stated that Medical Center's right to possession was terminated. The only authority that Medical Center cites in support of this application of 93002 is this court's opinion in Gluck versus Hadlock, an opinion authored by Justice Gardner, joined by Justices McCoy and Meyer. We don't believe Gluck comes anywhere near supporting Medical Center's interpretation of 93002. In Gluck, is the court, I'm sure the court is aware, the tenant was occupying the premises when the landlord physically entered the property, removed the tenant's personal belongings, took some of the belongings to the curb, and rented the house to someone else. The evidence was conflicting, but this court held that the evidence in favor of constructive eviction was sufficient. I'm sorry, not constructive eviction, but Section 9302 was sufficient to support a violation of that section and cause the tenant to believe that he could not enter the premises. The court did not hold, as we understand Medical Center to argue here, that the tenant's subjective belief was sufficient without evidence of acts that the landlord actually physically excluded or denied the tenant from the property. One important thing that I believe perhaps the appellee fails to appreciate here is that Section 93002 is a statutory remedy. It's not a common law remedy. And as such, as the court knows, it must be strictly construed to comport with the legislature's intent. Every court that has looked at this statute or its predecessor and interpreted it has held that literal physical exclusion of the tenant is required to establish a violation. And you would think that if the legislature, over all the years this statute or some variation of it has been on the books, if the legislature disagreed with the interpretation the Texas courts have given it, they would have sought to amend the statute and overrule these cases. But they haven't done that. We believe that that is evidence that the courts that have interpreted this statute have done so consistent with the legislative intent. The fact is here, Your Honors, that Medical Center had access to the property. It just never availed itself of that access. So because there is no evidence that Medical Center was actually physically prevented from entering the premises, the trial court's judgment, we believe, should be reversed as to the counterclaim on Section 9302 and judgment rendered for CenterPlace. Turning now to the constructive eviction slash breach of warranty of quiet enjoyment theory. We also believe that, the court's findings as to those theories are unsupported by the evidence for a related reason, and that is that there's no evidence that Center Place committed any act on the premises or directed any act toward the premises that interfered with Medical Center's use and enjoyment. On pages 15 through 16 of our opening brief, we discussed the elements necessary to establish a claim for constructive eviction. And among those elements is the requirement that there be some evidence of an act occurring on the property that substantially interferes with the tenant's intended use of the property. And according to the cases that we've discussed and cited in our briefs, mere notice to vacate is not enough, even if it's wrongful. And one good example of where the Texas courts that have addressed constructive eviction stand is the WIETA case. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but it's Q-U-I-T-T-A. Corpus Christi decision decided in 1991. There the tenant got behind in the rent, and the landlord demanded the tenant vacate the premises and told the tenant that he was going to get the sheriff to get him out if the tenant did not vacate the premises. The court in that case held that under the traditional elements of constructive eviction, that is not enough. It's undisputed in this case that Center Place did nothing on the property that interfered with Medical Center's use and enjoyment of the property. Medical Center's entire theory on this issue is based on verbal and written correspondence from Center Place's attorneys involving threats to bring legal action for alleged breaches of the lease, demands made by Center Place or its attorneys during negotiations for an extension of the lease that Medical Center claims are outside the terms of the lease, and alleged failures to release tenant improvement funds, provide written approval, which, by the way, is not required by the lease. The acts that I'm referring to are listed on pages 27 and 28 of the brief of the appellee. There are two cases that Medical Center relies on in support of the argument that these alleged acts are sufficient to support a constructive eviction or breach of warranty of quiet enjoyment finding. The Goldman case, another Corpus Christi decision, and Fabrique versus Gorman, a Dallas opinion, 1990 opinion. Both decisions, for the reasons that we've discussed in our briefs, we believe are distinguishable on their facts. Goldman, for example, in Goldman, the landlord testified that he had intentionally hindered the tenant's commercial use of the property by doing things such as demanding more rent that was due as a pretext for taking the property over because he wanted to get the tenant's profitable business. The Corpus Christi court in that case characterized the landlord's actions as malicious and unconscionable, and held that under the facts of that case, that the conventional breach of warranty of quiet enjoyment principles simply don't apply. Here, of course, there's no finding that Center Place's actions were malicious. There's no finding of unconscionability. There's no finding of bad faith. At the very worst, we believe that what you could say about the actions of Center Place are that perhaps some of their demands, some of their stances on breach were mistaken or misplaced. In Fabrique, the other case on which the Medical Center relies, the issue was whether the landlord had a duty to put the assignee of a tenant in possession when the lease permits assignment. The court held that the landlord does have that duty, and that the landlord in that case could not recover rent from an assignee for complying with the landlord's demand that he remain off the property under a threat of trespass. And again, in that the court in that case said the conventional elements of constructive eviction don't apply. Here we have a tenant who was in possession. It's undisputed that there's no threat of trespass here, and the validity of the lease granting a medical center the right to possession was not in question. So for these reasons and all the others that we stated in our briefs, Your Honor, we would ask that the judgment of the trial court be reversed and judgment rendered for Center Place. Thank you.
May it please the court. Judge Gabriel, as the fact finder in this case, tried this case for at least 13 days, heard a tremendous amount of evidence, weighed the credibility of at least 11 witnesses, and then rendered judgment for the medical center. Her judgment should be affirmed. There is substantial evidence to support her judgment. At the outset, I'd like to note that the trial court found that the medical center had no obligation to use the space, to build out the space. She also found that there was certainly no requirement that there be a date by which, under the lease, the medical center should have to build anything out. And that's important to the argument as it progresses today. This wasn't appealed by Center Place. Also, the medical center made no misrepresentations to Center Place. That was the finding of the court, and that has not been appealed. Further, Center Place has not appealed any evidentiary ruling by Judge Gabriel. As a result, there is certainly more than a scintilla of evidence to support her judgment. There is substantial evidence to support it. Before I address Section 93.002 of the Texas Property Code and constructive conviction, there are three matters that I want to go ahead and address now because I won't have an opportunity to address them later. First of all, I want to address the argument that as to the seven additional breaches that we believe sustain this the court's judgment by Center Place, that there was significant evidence that was introduced, and of course now Center Place recognizes those issues were in fact addressed at the court level. First of all, the medical center did raise an affirmative defense that the landlord's claims were barred by a prior material breach. We did not have to set out every act in our answer as to why we believed there was a material breach by the landlord. The landlord could have specially accepted to that affirmative defense, but did not. And that affirmative defense was sufficient to sustain these other breaches. Further, there was independent testimony by Matt Davis, who's the chief operating officer of the medical center, that the acts that we have set forth in our brief, page 40 to 41, were independent breaches. They weren't just acts of interference that support a breach of the provision of quiet enjoyment. They were independent breaches. And we also asserted that in the closing argument, as Center Place now concedes. Judge Gabriel, in lieu of making specific findings on each of those breaches, instead made the more general one, which she is entitled to do. And that was that the medical center's failure to pay rent was excused by Center Place's material breaches of the lease and the First Amendment prior to November 1st, 2007. So in other words, if the trial court's denial of specific findings do not conflict with the more general finding by the court, which is what occurred here, then those breaches stand and are certainly a sufficient basis for this court to affirm the judgment of Judge Gabriel.
Ms. Alexander, excuse my voice. How is threatening to bring legal action a breach of the lease?
Well, in this case, because they were also threatening to, they did accelerate the payments. So in our view, on that list, for example, they forced us to remove the sign. Center Place forced the medical center to remove the sign. That would be a breach. They would not allow the medical center to build an imaging center, even though that was a permitted use under the lease. And so those are the types of things that are alternative bases for a breach of the lease over and above, for example, a finding that, which the judge found, that Center Place had breached the lease by not providing tenant improvement funds. If the court looks at page 40 through 41 of the brief, that's where we identify what would be the additional breaches. And so we have listed at least seven different breaches that would support the judgment of the trial court. Further, I want to address Judge Gabriel's determination that Center Place breached the lease by failing to provide the TI funds. In this case, the medical center breached the triggered the provision for the TI funds when it initially requested that $95,000 be paid to the broker, which is what Center Place did. And at the time, the medical center said, we will let you know when we want to draw down additional funds. And that occurred on November 13th, 2006. That's when it began. Matt Davis, as the COO of the medical center, requested orally and in writing that Center Place provide the tenant improvement funds. And you can find that in Defendant's Exhibit 179, 187, and 191. Now, Center Place claims that in the last letter, in Exhibit 191, that the medical center basically said, we'll send you invoices for the TI funds, and that the medical center never did that. That's not what the letter says. The letter says, please provide details on how you would like the invoice project for the project or process for the project to be handled. Center Place never gave any information to the medical center about how that process would work, and in fact, either ignored the request for tenant finish out or kept asking the medical center to provide a stated date for the full completion of the property. And that was not something that was required by the lease. And furthermore, which is very important, on December 29th, 2006, and this is Defendant's Exhibit 193, Center Place's counsel wrote the medical center and stated, asking the landlord to pay for the limited construction as satisfaction of the partial performance contemplated is not reasonable. And further, partial performance as proposed by the tenant is of limited or no economic value to the landlord. So the bottom line is, Center Place refused to pay for the TI funds even though it was obligated to do so because it didn't think it was reasonable to pay it or it thought it was of limited economic value. Those are not conditions in the lease that allowed Center Place to refuse to pay the Medical Center of Louisville TI funds. And so there is substantial evidence in the record to support Judge Gabriel's finding that this was a prior material breach by the landlord before the medical center stopped paying rent. Further, the trial court determined that the landlord had breached the lease by failing to act reasonably in disproving its plans. The Center Place has come back and said, well, we didn't disapprove of those plans, but in fact they did. The landlord informed Matt Davis that it would not approve the build-out plans, and it withdrew whatever verbal approval it had given and then sent written disapproval. And this is something that Judge Gabriel was well aware of when she found this breach.
And what about the provision that if Centerplace doesn't respond within 10 days, that approval is deemed to have been given?
Because in this case, Your Honor, and this is what Judge Gabriel found, the landlord was flip-flopping so much in this case that the medical center couldn't really rely. It couldn't go out and spend all of its own money because the TI funds were only a very small portion of what it was cost to build this out. And Judge Gabriel found that under the terms of this lease that it was reasonable for the medical center to want verbal and or written approval, and they didn't get either in this case. The reasonableness is found in paragraph 10 of the First Amendment.
But that's only the partial performance.
And full and build out as well. But what's at issue, Your Honor, is the partial build out at this point. All right? Because even though the medical center presented a partial build out and a full build out plan, the way that the paragraph is worded in the First Amendment is that the medical center can fully build out or partially build out by March 15th, 2007, and if it does so, the landlord can't terminate the lease. It's not a default, they just can't terminate the lease. But in connection with the partial build out, the landlord has to act reasonably because there were certain things that had to be done for the partial build-out, and Judge Gabriel found that those things were included in the plans and that, in fact, that the landlord had acted unreasonably, not only in disapproving those plans, but other plans as well.
Okay, I want to ask another question about reasonableness. Except where it's specifically set forth that the landlord has to act reasonable, is there a covenant to act reasonably implied into every contract or lease? Well, let me limit that question to lease.
To this lease?
Yeah. Where is the reasonably coming from?
Our position is it's coming from paragraph 10 of the First Amendment. Although, Your Honor, I think it is reasonable to take the position that the landlord had to act reasonably based on the evidence and the rest of the provisions of the lease and the First Amendment as well. What I was going to say is if you look at Defendant's Exhibit 190, that is Matt Davis's letter that shows that Mr. Harper Vatt had changed his mind even as to the verbal approval, and he was going to send written disapproval, which he did in fact do in Defendant's Exhibit 189. And so those are the two exhibits that show that approval was withdrawn and that in fact the argument that CenterPlace had approved it is not correct. And the thing to remember is Judge Gabriel heard all of the evidence, and based on her findings, she recognized that in this case, the landlord was flip-flopping all over the place in terms of whether he did or didn't agree. And so to argue or to take the position they were deemed approved when he was telling the medical center they're not approved, I think shows that we've acted reasonably. Very quickly, I want to turn to Section 93.002, which is the constructive conviction, or 93.02 of the Texas Property Code. In this case, there is no question that the medical center was locked out of the space and did not have access to the space. There's no dispute that the sign had to be removed under threat, and there is no dispute that the CenterPlace told the medical center that we're putting another tenant in this space. And that's contained in the evidence. Well, Your Honor, the medical center didn't have access at that point. The medical center did allow Center Place to retain that key because Center Place wanted to retain that key. But if, in fact, the medical center had ever known that Center Place was going to take the position that we've got the key and now we're not going to allow you to have possession, then they wouldn't have allowed that. The medical center did not make a request after that other than it, well, I take it back. It did ask that it be allowed back in the sense that if you look at Plaintiff's Exhibit 271, the medical center was basically wanting to get back in the space. And what Center Place said was, we're not even going to discuss with you your future occupancy of this space unless you do things that are not included within the lease. For example, Center Place wanted the medical center to give up its right to build an imaging center. There was no reason for the medical center to give that up because they specifically had that right in paragraph 3 of the First Amendment. So Center Place wouldn't even talk to them about going back into the space until they agreed to that. Another condition in that letter was that the medical center had to decide exactly the amount that it was going to spend and when it was going to fully build out the space before Center Place would even discuss with Center Place allowing it to come back in. And again, that's outside the lease terms. That's an extra contractual demand. And so there are a number of things that Center Place said, well, we'll discuss future occupancy with you, but you have to agree to all these things that are not in the terms of the lease. And so I think if the court will look at defendants or plaintiff's exhibit 291, you will see that as well. It's plaintiff's exhibit 291. It's a July 21st, 2007 letter. If the court is willing to find
well,
that
section... Your time has expired, so if you could just wrap up.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Okay. The last point I'd like to make is under constructive eviction, there are two cases. Fabrique finds that you don't have to be in possession for there to be a constructive eviction, and Goldman and Cyberstein-Leibowitz both say that the landlord does not have to act on the premises before there's a constructive eviction. The record is full of the acts of the landlord interfering with the medical center's use. And again, we just want to ask the court to affirm Judge Gabriel's findings, including her finding that under the specific circumstances of this case, which she recognized were unique, that she found that the medical center was physically excluded from the premises. So we ask that you affirm Judge Gabriel's judgment because she weighed all of the credibility, she listened to the witnesses, and she, just like the jury, should be given deference in terms of her judgment. Thank you.
I have a question. Another question, please. Even though time is up, we can go aside another minute. Was there any dispute about the purpose of this lease for the court? The medical center to be the anchor tenant of the building. Was there any evidence about that?
Was there evidence about that? There was evidence both ways about that, but there was some evidence in the record, and that was a consideration about the medical center being an anchor tenant in that building, and those went to the allegations by Center Place that somehow the medical center had misrepresented what it would use the property for, et cetera. And the lease, the judge found, was very clear that the medical center had no obligation to use the property at all, had no obligation to build anything out. And she also found that the medical center had not made any misrepresentations to Center Place.
Okay. And did medical center ever make any finish out? Did it ever do any finish out?
It sent Beck, its contractor, in to work on the to develop the plans for the property, but it wasn't allowed to do the finish out because Center Place wouldn't provide the TI funds and Center Place wouldn't give it approval to go forward with its plans.
Okay.
That is exactly right, Your Honor.
And therefore, what the medical center is doing is obligating itself to pay rent for 10 years, a space that's never going to build out.
Your Honor, the medical center wanted to build out the space. There was plenty of evidence in the record that that was its desire and that it came up with different plans, that's why it retained Beck to develop plans for the center. They developed plans for a sleeping center, an imaging center, an freestanding emergency center. And when they were thrown out of this space by Center Place, they did in fact construct in Flower Mound the freestanding emergency center with the imaging center. So their intent was all along to use that land and that building. That's what they wanted to do, and that's why they spent all the money developing the plans. But they weren't obligated to do it. Thank you.
I don't need any more time. I will be brief. With regard to Justice Meyer, your question, that's been a question we've had all along. I think Center Place had throughout the history of this case is what were medical center's intentions with this open-ended lease, and I think there's a need for some explanation of why from the very beginning there was a year and a half delay and nothing was done after the initial plans were approved, and then an extension to March 15 of 2007, and then they were coming back asking for another extension. With regard to the seven additional breaches issue, Justice Gardner, I think you correctly recognize that the acts that Medical Center is alleging constitute independent breaches from the breach of warranty and quiet enjoyment simply don't implicate any provisions in the lease. That we can tell, and Medical Center has not identified any provisions that were violated. Threats of legal action, hard-nosed bargaining and negotiations and tactics, we don't believe constitute breaches of the lease. With regard to the issue on Center Place's failure to release tenant improvement funds, I think counsel's argument is somewhat out of context. What happened was on December 18 of 2006, Medical Center requested the remaining funds. Center Place had already released $95,000. There was about $500,000 worth of tenant improvement funds available. They requested the release of those funds, but 3 days later, they sent Center Place a letter and informed Center Place that that Medical Center will have all invoices sent directly to Center Place. No invoices were ever sent to Center Place. Center Place, there's no evidence that Center Place had any objection to that. In fact, Section 10E of the lease expressly provides for payment of the tenant release, tenant improvement funds in installment as the work progresses if the parties agree. We assumed that Medical Center was in agreement to have the tenant improvement funds released as the work progresses when they said they'd send the invoices. At trial, the reason Medical Center gave for not invoicing Center Place was this letter. It's Defendant Exhibit 193 that Center Place's lawyer sent Medical Center, raising concerns about Medical Center's desire to only partially perform and urging that Medical Center move forward. The letter speaks for itself, but at the very last sentence of that letter, the attorney for Center Place asked Medical Center to respond. Quote, I will await your call or other correspondence. That is the evidence that they gave at trial to Judge Gabriel as to why, to support their argument that Center Place refused to release tenant improvement funds. We just simply don't believe that that letter is sufficient evidence of a refusal to release tenant improvement funds. Finally, Your Honors, this finding that Center Place was unreasonable in disapproving the plans has always been somewhat of a mystery to me. I've never really figured out where that came from. Paragraph 10, where counsel said the source of this reasonableness requirement comes from, paragraph 10 of the First Amendment applies to Section 13 of the lease. And we discuss that on page 22 of the brief of the appellee. But paragraph 10 of the amended lease states that Section 13 of the lease shall be expanded. And this is the provision in the lease that gives the tenant or landlord remedies, Section 13. Shall be expanded to grant landlord the right to terminate, et cetera, and that goes on as determined in landlord's reasonable judgment. The controlling provision of the lease is Section 10C, the provision that Justice Garner referred to, which provides that if the landlord does not give any written objection or comment to the plans are deemed approved. And that happened twice. As to all the plans that were submitted, they were both deemed approved. The theory that Medical Center advances is based on the testimony of Matt Davis, the chief operating officer of Medical Center, that he needed written approval to satisfy the higher-ups in the Medical Center organization. That's where this whole idea of written approval being required and Medical Center not giving it comes from, was his testimony that he needed it to satisfy people within his organization. The lease governs the rights and obligations and duties of the parties in this case, not Medical Center's policies, internal policies, which at the time all of this was taking place, Center Place did not have any idea about.
Was there some reference in the brief to prior dealings between the parties, or was there some reference to prior dealings in the evidence as a basis for requiring written consent?
No, ma'am. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Again, we pray that the judgment be reversed and judgment rendered on behalf of Center Place. Thank you.
Argument today for your briefing. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and our clerk will adjourn the court.